Okay, how's everybody doing? Yeah, Laguna Beach Politics. I'm Tyler Russell, I'm the general manager of KX93.5, and this is the first time that myself or Shayna from Stunews have ever hosted one of these things, so please bear with us and still listen to our radio station and read our newspaper if we mess it up. So, an important reminder about being live on the radio is we are an FCC licensed radio station, okay? That means no swearing, all right? Okay, Tony? You got it? All right? No swearing. So, nobody yell out any swear word. I mean, seriously, we'll lose our FCC license. Don't do that. Each question will have a time limit. We don't have a single targeted question for any one individual. Everybody's going to answer the same question. You'll have somewhere between a minute and 2 minutes to answer each one. On your pieces of paper, you probably noticed some questions you've heard before, but the section that you hopefully have not heard before is we're doing a rapid fire round, both before the break and after the break. They're going to be 15-second responses just on a lot of different positions and platforms in Laguna. So that's kind of the difference. That's hopefully the interesting part. This is Ed. Ed has a sign that says 15 seconds, and when it reaches 15 seconds, he'll hold it up, and then at zero, Ed will do the following. And that's how you know you have 0 seconds left, okay? And then we'll move on. Okay, any questions? Whatever. Here you go, Shayna.
Thank you, Tyler, and thank you to our candidates. This is a beautiful bunch up here from the inside out. And thank you guys out there. This is a beautiful crowd from the inside out. This is what Laguna is, and this reminds me of why I moved here 10 years ago, right after college, and what makes this the best small town in the world. Woo! Along those lines, I really want to set an intention for this forum. You know, like Tyler said, we love the positivity. Cheering is fine, but we really don't want booing. You know, that's just not the vibe that we're trying to create here. We are all neighbors. We're neighbors today. We're going to wake up neighbors tomorrow. And on November 7th, we're neighbors too. So let's remember that and keep that in mind as we go and move forward, that we all care about Laguna. That's why we're here. Every candidate here cares about Laguna. I will vouch to that. And I think all of you care equally deeply as well. So with that in mind, we're going to have some fun. We're going to make this a live event. Let's go. So we'll lead off introductions, 30 seconds each. And we're going to start with George.
Anyways, folks, thanks for coming. Thanks for having me be up here. I've been here in Laguna for 42 years, so I've pretty much planted myself here quite a long time ago. I've seen a lot of things change, but anyways, hello, and George Dubin, that's my name.
Hi, everyone. I'm Judy Mancuso. I've been here over 23 years. And I ran in 2016, over 3,800 of you voted for me, so thank you very much for that. I'm looking forward to your vote again, and everybody else, you got a second chance. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Peter Blake. I have a website, Peter Blake for Council 2018, and on KX93 is a two-hour podcast where I dig into all of my issues, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Thank you for coming tonight.
I'm Toni Eisman, and I have been on the City Council for 20 years, and that's a fact, and it's not a fault. During those years, I have learned a lot about government. That's really important, so there are going to be two other people, hopefully, along with me, going into the city and making things better. I know people not just around Orange County, but all up and down the state. Regional problems, we have to fix what's going on. We have to make things better.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sue Kemp. I'm in my third term as planning commissioner and served on other volunteer committees since 2010. I'm a career business person. I'm now retired. If I'm elected, I think I'll be able to hit the ground running, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you. And thank you so much for coming. It's a really good-looking crowd from up here.
Hi, I'm Allison Matthews. I was a businesswoman for 12 years, so I do understand what's going on with the small businesses here in Laguna Beach, and I'd like to help them out as much as possible and also get some young people living downtown, which I think would be great. And I am just wanted a chance to say how much fun it's been being with these people and learning about them. And thank you for having us.
I'm Cheryl Kinsman. I'm a local CPA, and the reason I'm running has everything to do about money. I am very concerned about the financial viability of this city. I'm very concerned. I think my time is up, so more later.
Hello, Laguna. Paul Merritt. No, I didn't come here in 1864. I'm a registered independent voter, and that's important for Laguna. But before I run out of time, we've had many forums, and until just now, no one's mentioned the senior citizens. I want you to know that Paul Merritt thinks of all of Laguna, all of the details, all of the citizens, the forgotten businesses, the forgotten artists. Paul Merritt for City Council. I'm for the community.
Hello, Lorene Laguna, and I just found out this year that I'm going to be a senior citizen at age 55. So to speak to that, I would like to see our city become more friendly and resident-serving. One of the things that our community needs are town meetings. We have a town of very sophisticated people, intelligent people, that deserve the opportunity to ask a question to your elected officials and have an actual answer back. Instead of having your emails ignored and your phone calls ignored, I'd like to hear your voice. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ann Christoph. I've been living in Laguna Beach for 47 years, and during that time, I've been involved in a lot of projects that I think that we all appreciate and love. Preserving open space, the park, Bluebird Park, Alta Laguna Park, Village Green, the garden. And if you like those, I think you'll like what I'll do on the City Council. Thank you.
All right, candidates, thanks so much for your introductions. We're going to move on now to our first question, which is intentionally a little open-ended. And by the way, if you forget the question by the time you're the eighth or ninth person, it's going to be behind you. So the first question is, we're asking you to paint a picture of your vision of Laguna over the next 5 to 10 years, and we're going to give you 1 minute each on this one, starting, should we start at the beginning? Starting with George.
Well, as I said before, I've lived here for 42 years, and I've seen a lot of changes come about. And one of the big changes and one of the reasons I'm here is because I feel the cultural community has been overlooked quite a bit by what's going on in City Hall these days. I think we need to start being more proactive in our approach to things instead of being reactive when people come and bring a project or something happens, whether it's an environmental issue or anything else. I find that the city just reacts instead of reaching out to and dealing with issues that are obviously in need of change. So one of the big things that I'm here for is to try to maintain our cultural heritage and make sure it's viable going forward. Thank you.
Hi. So the vision I have is that it'll be the greenest and the bluest Laguna Beach. It'll be the greenest because we'll start recycling all of our wastewater. And we could have a perimeter water so that not only for fire mitigation, but also for our ecosystem. It'll be the bluest Laguna because we'll do everything possible to stop any kind of runoff or untreated water going into our ocean. It'll be a more pedestrian-friendly Laguna Beach. We can close off part of the city and have zero-emission vehicles going back and forth. So it'll be more pedestrian-friendly and very green and very blue. Thank you.
In 10 years, I'd like to see a Laguna that's charming, small, sophisticated. Emphasis on the word sophisticated. We have charming and small, but it's frumpy. And unfortunately, for the last 20 years, we've watched this town degrade while the nanny state professionals up here have made it that way. I look for a town that is a place that we can live in for the rest of our lives, where we can visit other cities but always feel free to walk around our own downtown and feel great about it. I want to reverse the last 10 years. I want to make it abnormal to see people shooting crystal meth and heroin on Main Beach. I want the squalor out of the canyon. I do not see a day in this community when we have to accept the fact that we are talking about permanent supportive housing of chronically homeless people who are addicted to drugs or mentally incapacitated. We need to treat those people with dignity, build homes for them outside of the most expensive real estate in the country, and we need to return this town back to the safe place where a mom could walk down the street with her children.
In the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see some things happen we've all been waiting for. We're going to see the Hotel Laguna back in its glory. We're going to see the movie theater shining, and who knows, but there's some things lurking. I can tell you that people think that the city isn't interested in these things happening. We're working a lot to make it happen. But in the next 5 to 10 years, it's not just what we will see, but what we won't see. And I think that's a big consideration, because if our town isn't careful, we're going to go through some changes that are not going to benefit us. You know, I say I put residents first. And putting residents first means we have a vibrant downtown. Putting residents first means that your neighborhoods are clean. But putting residents first means we have to be careful and treasure that which we have right now and why we moved here.
Okay, so I'd like to see a very vibrant downtown, and I'm not just talking about businesses in the downtown. I'd like to see, you know, people living in downtown. As cities are evolving and going through these changes in the retail atmosphere, the answer that all these cities, particularly coastal cities, are arriving at is that they need to have housing in the downtown. Multiple use on the first floor, housing on the maybe on the second or the third. Secondly, I'd like to see better transportation options. I'd like to see places where cars can be parked. I'd like to see, you know, permitted parking in the neighborhood, so get the cars out of the neighborhood, people into the parking garages, maybe peripheral parking garages if we can do that. I'd like to see the TCA do their part. They committed to making the toll road free after 20 years, and they haven't done it. They larded it on with debt, and now they're coming through Coast Highway. And then finally, I want to make sure that we don't have any catastrophes here, that we create a very safe environment here. We don't have any fires. We don't have any floods. We don't have any major, you know, tragic events that happen to affect our town.
This topic is very close to my heart, because I what I'm witnessing right now is I see a village that is slowly dying. I see retail closing. I see vacancy coming in. And what I would like to see in 10 years is smart urban professionals, artists, LCAD students, you know, all the, because LCAD students can only be housed for their first year. Then they have to go find housing. And sometimes they have to do it, obviously, out of Laguna Beach. I would like to see, people use the word vibrant. I want to see commerce come back to the village. And that means people going to restaurants to eat and to walking to the grocery stores and having commercial zoned space that is just sitting there zoned to be residential space. Prefab houses, please go to Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, tmatthews.com. You'll see the whole layout. It's basically my entire platform. This is what I'd like to see.
I agree with everything these prior candidates have said, so I'm going to focus on one thing, and that's parking. I will do everything in my power if I'm elected to reverse the decision that's been made on the $11 million paving job. That's what they call parking. There should be parking structures up against the hillside. There should be bathrooms. How about, you know, tourists come from far away, no place to go. So, and the digester will be moved. I know it's on the historic register, but it can be moved. I've been to Egypt. They moved the Temple of Ramses up above the Nile. They can move that digester. Thank you.
If you give me the job as your elected official, I have to look out on the horizon, and one of the horizons is I am against the new proposed sales tax increase. It's 25 years of taxation. Secondly, we're going to have to really get aware with protecting our public beaches, our beaches. There's an incursion of plastic that will be coming on our shores. We have to get ready for it. What the offshore oil issue was 15 years ago, the plastic and nuclear problem in San Onofre is a problem today. Additionally, my parking and circulation will be solved within 10 years because we'll have auto drive cars, and someone told me they just send them on autopilot out in the canyon parking lot and they can circle until you buzz your button to have them come and pick you up in front of the restaurant. So that will be a no-brainer. And lastly, on Cox Cable, the rates are outrageous. The city hasn't handled its franchise.
I think to finish Paul's question would be municipal wireless in this town for free. But let me start with a picture of your vision of Laguna. Guess what, people? The picture has been painted, and it's called our green open space and our blue belt. I am a member of the Laguna Canyon Conservancy on the executive board, and that is what I intend to protect, because that is what makes Laguna Beach special. And by the way, that's why I moved here. Because this place has the most incredible vistas that I choose to protect. Hello? Okay. I also see Vision Zero, safe pedestrian crossings. I also see complete streets. And I see dogs and resident parking permits for everyone, because we are resident property taxpayers and we deserve to be first in this community.
Hi. Is this working?
I have a little different view of Laguna Beach, because I believe that we are privileged to live in a community that is the 0.1% of the best places in the entire world. And our duty is to keep this community solvent and beautiful. What we're selling is beauty for our residents and for people that come to visit us. My vision of the future is that the problems that have been outlined here have been solved, and we are united as a community again, the way we were when we did the green belt, the way we were when we did the height limit in Main Beach Park, and we will be on to our next most inspiring thing that we can contribute to the world. And then we will go out, and people will see us as an example, and they will do that in their own communities.
All right, we're going to move on to our next question. We'll start with Judy on this one. We all know we have an affordable housing crisis here in Laguna, especially for our artists, seniors, and emerging youth. If elected, what specifically, if anything, will you do to create more affordable housing?
I've had to answer this at all the other forums as well. And I think most of you know that I have a nonprofit and I work in animal welfare, animal rights in Sacramento. And affordable housing has been a very hot subject. And what I know about affordable housing is that it is happening all over our state. There's a ton of people making money off these projects. And I don't think we have to do anything but find the right project and get it done. You know, there's the environment that we have, you know, we can't encroach in our open space, and there's environmental issues with watershed. But for goodness sakes, somebody's going to have a project and we just make it happen. It's not that big of a deal. Thank you.
Affordable housing can only happen in the canyon. It's not going to happen anywhere in town. We have the most expensive real estate in the country. In the canyon, we have an opportunity to work with development that's responsible. We have to work with the school. We have to figure out how to house our elders, how to house our artists, and how to house a generation that have gone to high school here who are coming home to $3,000 one-bedroom apartments. We can pay lip service all night long about what we're going to do about affordable housing, but the only place for it is in the canyon, and it can happen in the canyon.
I think people are proposing housing, but the really operative word is affordable, because you can build a lot of apartments, but that doesn't mean they're going to be affordable. Or I think affordability comes if we use the people who put their name on the list first. So we've got to be smart about this. And being smart means that we don't take money that's going to have those strings attached. And the other thing we don't want to do is have housing that will be $3,000 for a one-bedroom, and then all we will have done is litter the canyon with a bunch of high-rise apartments and not have affordability.
Yeah, I think the most obvious solution is there's a new state law. It's called accessory dwelling units, and we have an ordinance, and I don't know if it's through the council yet or not, but it allows people to rent out portions of their home. So if you're an elderly person and you want to be able to stay in your house and you could have a caregiver live on site with you, or vice versa, if you'd like someone else to rent your house and you can live in the smaller room, you can stay in your house. That's the best way to accomplish affordable housing in Laguna Beach. The second thing is, I agree with Tony, somebody really needs to donate land, and then we could do a public-private partnership. But that's, you know, probably the second easiest way to do it. And then thirdly, I talked a little bit about the downtown. There's a lot of office space downtown that are small. We could convert those to housing. Students could live there. Maybe these little 500 square foot places. They have restrooms and they're equipped for it. So that's probably my third solution.
I think it's sort of incredible how everyone's talking about what I was talking about 3 months ago about turning the commercial space into affordable housing for students. For me, question one and two are interchangeable, okay? What I want is to build a Laguna for our future, for our children, for the ones, let's get some, you know, some people moving back into the city, having vibrancy. In my hometown of Providence, which I will only bring up once this time, there would be no Annex in Annie today because they started off, you know, in a one little loft place that was built by Buddy Cianci out of one of these commercial spaces. There would be no real CVS going around all over the country doing this. This was a long project coming, but it is so vitally important to set up housing and to make this a welcome place for bright, new, young people to come in and be the next generation of Laguna.
One of my clients, who happens to be gay and a real estate developer, decided that he wanted to do something for the housing for people with HIV. And so with government money, including city money and FHA money, he knew how to build Hagen House. And that's what he did. And there are other places that can be affordable just like that. There's a building next to the Whole Foods. There are some properties around town that can be converted. Maybe I can think of some motels that are really maybe not in the best of shape. So creative, good private and public money can be used. And I don't know about the work part, but the live part I think we can do.
It's October, it's getting near Halloween, and we've all heard the horror stories about Design Review Board. The new council has to have a root canal on design review. Outrageous. 7, 9, 10, 12 years to get a project pushed through. This is why there's a failure in these areas, and it lays on the shoulders of the policymakers. I'm a real estate professional. I have a prospective client in the canyon that has a large warehouse. They want to put in the downstairs for artists' work, working spaces, display spaces, etc. The top would be the affordable units crammed together, but it would be tasteful, it would be architectural. The problem is the client said, I won't live long enough to see the project done. Forget it. There has to be a change.
Lorene Laguna, I have to spin a little bit off of that because the neighbor behind me, when I went around to gather signatures for my nomination form, in fact, I got 65 of them, the neighbor behind me said she spent $80,000 and had not put a spade in the ground or a nail up just to go through the process. This is obscene. But we're talking about affordable housing. So let's get to the ADUs and what Governor Brown did for this community to allow places to be configured to put affordable housing in. Now, what's affordable? It's not going to be from contractors building because we all know that contractors are incredibly expensive now. So we need tiny houses. In the canyon, tiny, small, rural, small scale, which follows the Laguna Canyon annexation plan. We also can legalize non-conforming structures that are existing and repurpose M1A and M1B zones in the canyon. However, we must listen to the residents that are living out there. They are the ones that know and understand the canyon.
Well, there have been a lot of ideas suggested by the previous panelists. And I believe we need to first look at a Laguna solution. I don't think big projects are the answer for us. I think the ADUs are a good possibility if we can assure that they're affordable. The state passed a law that said that they are permitted in a certain of right situation, but they didn't allow the city to put controls on how much they'd be renting for to assure that they really would be affordable. I think we need to work on that. We have an affordable housing task force that needs to really look into this and come up with some creative ideas. And we need to stop the bleeding. We need to stop converting existing apartments into vacation rentals.
I hear a lot of good ideas, and I hear a lot of pandering up here. When we have a city that has the one and only viable live-work project in the canyon, and it's taken 10 years to get it through the city, the Coastal Commission, and everything else, and there still isn't a shovel in the ground, that's a disgrace. And every artist and every creative in this community should be really pissed off about that, and I know I am. And I live in the canyon. I've lived in the canyon since 1978, and I can tell you that some of these people who live out there are part of the problem, okay? I'm sorry to say that. They're our neighbors, but I'm telling you what, if we don't change just talking about things and start being more proactive, we're not going to have an artist community anymore. And there's plenty of industrial buildings out there that are one story that could easily be added to if the city and the property owners got together on this. Thank you.
So I just have to talk to our radio audience for a moment because we are still live on the radio. And if you're expecting Led Zeppelin right now, we're doing a city council forum. So hopefully that's better. You're listening to KX93.5 and we're live at the Women's Club. This next question is a 2-minute question, or up to 2 minutes if you'd like to use that amount of time. We're asking you, if elected, what are up to 3 things you would do about the problem with homelessness in Laguna Beach? Again, that question is behind you, and this time we're starting with Peter.
Well, for starters, we have a criminal element that's in town, and I'm tired of hearing we can't do anything about it, we can't do anything about it. We can do something about it. We need to send cops down to the beach and into the canyon. We need to make these people uncomfortable. What's the most important thing in the world to a drug addict? His drugs. More than likely, I have search and seizure rights on that person. I'll remove those drugs from him. He will not stay around very long after he's had his drugs taken away a few times. In terms of coming to terms with this permanent supportive housing, which gets floated around by the compassionate ignorance in town, we will never be able to build permanent supportive housing in the most expensive real estate in the country. Hiss away. It's not going to happen. We need to figure out how to help these people, bring them into areas where housing is inexpensive, where you can truly help someone. Taking away their dignity and driving them to the beach and leaving them there to sleep on the grass all day long is not the solution. I don't care how compassionate you are. Let's get real about solving this problem.
If we have 100, I'll just say 100 homeless in Laguna, probably 90 of those homeless people are benign. You don't really notice them. They're quiet. And then there's that 10% that causes all the problems. And they're antisocial. And that goes with the mental illness. And I think we need to aggressively deal with those people who are making it difficult for the downtown merchants, frightening the people that are walking down the street. We may have a new district attorney in this next election. We'll see what happens. But I do believe that we have to have an aggressive way of dealing with repeat offenders so that they don't get in the police blotter three times. They go and they will be helped one way or another in jail or in a hospital. Now, when you think about the compassionate, ignorant people, all my friends, I would like to say that we have bragging rights in this town, and the Friendship Shelter is absolutely extraordinary. And they have found homes for over 100 homeless people. So permanent supportive housing, I didn't want in the canyon. I opposed that when it was proposed. It didn't make sense. But finding housing in other places where there is support is what takes people out of their homeless situation. But like every other town, but what's different about us, we don't have economically homeless people. We don't have families that are homeless. If they are, we're taking care of our friends and neighbors. But the people who we have in Laguna who are homeless are a combination, dual diagnosed, mentally ill, and drug addicted, the toughest of them all. And we need to make sure that we keep the downtown safe.
Yeah, this is a problem, of course, across Orange County. Governor Brown signed a very important bill called AB 448. AB 448 creates a housing trust in Orange County, a funding mechanism for philanthropic and public funds. The aim of this organization is to plan and build permanent supportive housing with wraparound services. There's 100 acres in El Toro, there's 100 acres at Fairview. There's places in the county that this can be done. And what we need to do, if I'm on the council, is I'm going to push for regional solutions. You know, I've met with Jason Ferris. He's our outreach officer for the city of Laguna Beach. He does an excellent job connecting with the homeless every day. But what you need to know is he often gives these people bus tickets and sends them home. He often locates their relatives and sends them home. So he often works with a Friendship Shelter to get them some permanent supportive housing or some housing. So we also need to toughen our laws, because Jason also said to me, he said, I arrest these same people 5 or 6 times, and by the time I get the paperwork in, they're back on the street. So we need to advocate for tougher laws. And, you know, I think there's a bunch of money sitting in Sacramento for mental health. This has been totally disregarded by the state of California, but there's money there. And I think once these facilities start getting set up and the money spent, we'll get some traction on the homeless problem. I think it's going to take a while, but I think there's a lot of money coming in and a lot of plans, and I'm optimistic about it.
Just real quick, Allison, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to remind you guys, the spirit of Laguna Community, somebody just came up to the front and said they were listening on the radio and they don't know who anybody is because I forgot to tell you to introduce yourselves before you answer a question because obviously they can't see you. So just before you answer a question, just say your name from henceforth. Thank you.
Allison Matthews, and I'm running for city council, and my website is Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, T. Matthews, M-A-T-H-E-W-S, 1-T. I think I'm the only person here, sitting here, who's on the Affordable Housing Task Force. Now, they did not create that out of a vacuum, okay? They created that because there's a need for affordable housing. But that is completely separate from the homeless. I spent two nights by myself at the ASL, where the homeless go. All right, and I was trying to figure out who these people are. Well, more than 50% of them, well, about 98% of them were white. Let's start there. 50% of them were my age or older. Many of them had shops in town and were too embarrassed. I'm going to get, oh. Were too embarrassed. They said, please don't use my name. I don't want people in town to know that this has happened to us. So that was very difficult. I did see, of course, some addiction issues. We've got to tease out those problems between addiction and domestic violence. I saw a lot of people from overflows that couldn't hold them in there. And I saw some mentally ill. But as I spoke to Dawn yesterday and Jason, I saw the new house that's going up on South Coast Highway, I feel much more comfortable. 88 homeless people we've got right now. And Peter, by the way, about the crime and these scared mothers that seem to be walking around at night, terrified, clutching their purses that some homeless person's going to come after them, you are much more likely to have someone in a Jaguar or Maserati pull up, lift up her skirt, and pee on your gallery as you are a homeless person, my friend.
All right, up here, we often get criticized we're not answering the question. So believe it or not, I'm going to try. It says three things. I'm going to go for it. So the first one, and I'm Cheryl Kinsman, and I'm a CPA, and I'm running for city council. We need more boots on the ground. We need police to patrol. Heisler Park, Main Beach, downtown, the homeless are there, and we can politely ask them to refrain from panhandling aggressively. That's what we're allowed to do. Number two, we can work with the hospital because the hospital has those three-day-old mental health patients, and I have personally seen just 2 days ago a hospital employee wheeling a wheelchair all the way down to Coast Highway and leaving this person on at the bus bench. So those people need to be transported back to the cities or wherever they came from. They should not be left in Laguna Beach. And third, we need to work with the federal Judge Carter, who is trying to get other cities to do similar things to what we are doing, because the burden right now is way too high on Laguna Beach. How many homeless people have we seen in Newport Beach? You know, I've seen with my own eyes a Newport Beach police car drive up to what used to be the surf shop in North Laguna and open the door and get a homeless person let out and said, walk that way.
Paul Merritt and I approve this message. This issue is hyper complex, but I'll start with one thing. We are the most compassionate and caring town in all of Southern California on this issue. But my colleagues, most of them, do not understand the tidal wave from Sacramento of money that's coming down to Orange County. We are a target just as LA is. Right now, already, in Orange County, we have 2,542 permanent supportive excuse me, strike that word. It's not supportive. It's permanent housing for the homeless. 2,542, they propose to add another 3,000. Your neighborhood, my neighborhood, is at risk for social engineering on this. This is not a shelter. It's not a food giveaway. It is the government in Sacramento saying you will take Mary Meth from Chicago and give her an apartment, no strings attached. I have sat in the nonprofit workshops. This is what they propose. It's not a temporary issue. It is permanent homeless housing. So we have to be very careful. And I was the only candidate that in the last week of August spoke against this at the city council and pleaded with them not to take the bait, which was $500,000 from Jerry Brown. We signed the letter of intent. It's already up in Sacramento to open the door. And if you don't believe this, ask your friends in Sherman Oaks what happened 2 weeks ago. Ask your friends in Huntington Beach about the 46 units proposed at their front door. And then think of Laguna Niguel, because it is coming around. We've got to be very careful, and we have to understand and study the details and issues of permanent homeless housing in our city.
Lorraine Laguna. Somehow there is a place between Peter and Tony in this solution. Just so you know, I'm about balance. 3 years ago, I was on the front cover of the Laguna Beach Indy, and I was trying to get the city to enact a panhandling ordinance after watching the woman on Forest Avenue drop her drawers and defecate and urinate on a public bench. I was incredibly upset about that incident. And this goes on and on. And we need to have equal enforcement. I can tell you this, that to park a wheelchair in the middle of a sidewalk is breaking our municipal code 1010070. I can assure you, should I set up a yoga mat there and start doing my arms and my stretches, I will be hauled off and put in jail and fined. So I ask that the police department have equal enforcement of the law for all of us, whether you're homeless or you're a resident that can afford to pay your ticket and your fine. In addition to that, I agree with Peter. We should not be busing them in a van, a $68,000 brand new van, down to the bus stop every day. For what? What are they to do all day? They have nothing to do. Spare time is the devil's advocate. Let's keep them at the ASL. Let's keep that shelter open, and let's give them purpose-driven life solutions there. Let's bring in social services. Let's think about growing an organic garden out there and having them pet the dogs at the animal shelter. There are things that can be done to solve between Peter and Tony that are purpose-driven life solutions and something that is a moderate approach.
Ann Christoph, this is a very complex, multifaceted solution, and we've heard a whole list of them tonight, and many of those ideas are worth pursuing. And we should be working with the regional situation with Judge Carter, looking at how we can, as a whole region, deal with this problem. We need to look at the fact that the whole affordable housing situation has increased the pressure. We have someone who is part of our South Laguna Garden who could no longer afford her apartment. She is homeless, but she is a functional, wonderful person. She lives in her car. There is a whole range of people who have lost their housing because they can't afford it. So that's one part, and then there's the mentally ill and the drugs and all those things. Friendship Shelter has had outreach workers that go to people, go and interact with the people that are downtown, try to find services for them. We need to support that. And I agree with Lorraine's ideas about providing useful activities so that they're not just hanging around. I mean, who wants to just hang around? Life is precious, every moment is precious, and they would love, I would hope, get to the point where they would love
feeling that their life is of value. And I think we should do the kinds of things she suggested to promote that. Thank you.
Comrade George Dugan with you. Listen, you know, when we, you know, this is a hugely, it's a nationwide problem. The thing is whenever you build a 40-room shelter or a 120-room shelter in a community, you're going to get three or four times as many homeless people coming there. So the thing is like, I don't have any grand solutions to this, but that's something I did think about because I spent a lot of time after the El Toro Marine Air Station closed working on artwork out there. And there's a lot of great buildings there that are not in the middle of any of our, not only our community, but the surrounding communities. And I think working on a county level to establish, at least for the South County homeless people, a shelter, taking one of those existing buildings and redeveloping it into at least a South County or regional homeless shelter that could be staffed properly, funded by all the communities around here, including the county. And it's also in a place that isn't in a community necessarily, especially on the southwest side that's closest to the freeway. There's some amazing buildings out there. The reason I was thinking about them is because I thought they'd make great artist-led work studios too. However, I think each city they could potentially build a shelter or have a redevelop a space within their community, but most people don't want them in their neighborhood. So I think utilizing one of the huge empty buildings out there that's just sitting there either waiting to get torn down or who knows what would be a really good place to start looking at building a regional homeless shelter that could take care of a lot of people.
Okay, three things. The first one is stop the dumping. There are sober living homes in the hospital who are dumping patients when they're out of insurance money on our streets. They're bringing people in. They're bringing people in from out of state, taking their insurance money, not doing a darn thing for them. And when they're done, they dump them. And we have to stop it. The second thing I heard from law enforcement is the time it takes between a transient who is a criminal, commits a crime, and the time it takes to where that their crime is prosecuted is too long. And it's our city manager, not our city manager, our city attorney's fault. So we need to decrease the time from when they commit the crime and they're prosecuted. The reason is they go to the OC jail. And when they get to the OC jail, they can dry out and sober up. So it gets them out of Laguna Beach. They have to face the consequences and they sober up. And from there, they can go wherever. The third thing is, for the people that are here, we have to segregate the populations. There's veterans, there's women, there's mentally ill. There are best practices at other cities, and this is fear-mongering about this, we're going to be building these meth homes next to you. That is not true. I read AB 448. What AB 448 says is that the county of Orange has so many people we are responsible for as homeless. They do not have to be housed in Laguna Beach. Our bit of money and our housing, we can, as long as we are housing some, we can house the rest that we're responsible for out of Laguna Beach at a regional facility, and the money that is that comes from our pot goes there to house them.
All right, again, we're live at the Women's Club on KX93.5 for the STU News and KX93.5 City Council Candidate Forum. So we're going to move on now, right before the break, to the rapid fire round. All right, these are going to be 15-second answers each. And if you could please introduce yourself at the beginning, but we'll do our best to not count that in the time when you introduce yourself, so only the answer. So 15 seconds each. Most questions are about whether you are in favor of something or not, for the most part. So we're going to start with Tony for the first question and then move down 15 seconds each. Do you support making Forest Avenue pedestrian traffic only?
I don't support Forest Avenue pedestrian traffic only because our streets are so delicate. Remember when the Third Street Hill closed and what happened in the downtown? Do you remember chaos, everything? Every single one of those arteries is interconnected, and we don't want to start one of those.
Ms. Sukamp, I don't support it either. One option, if we wanted to close down part of it, we could extend the sidewalk on one side. We could have parking on the other side. We're so compacted in the downtown area. I think when you take one street out of the mix, you just cause chaos for the community.
Hi, I'm Allison T. Matthews. I am not for it. After talking to the firefighters today, all avenues should be open, first of all. So it just doesn't, plus with parking, it doesn't make sense, so no.
Cheryl Kinsman, I do support it for certain events like Christmas. And I have seen in Europe what's called bollards, and they are remote-controlled posts that come up. So you can just, if you want to close it down, say for an evening.
Paul Merritt, let's try to get the city council out of being merchants and businessmen. That's why so many merchants and businessmen are closing. Let's let the merchants get their two cents. Do they want it closed or not? And secondly, I would consider it only if we recover the 120 parking spaces missing at City
Hall. Lorraine Laguna. I am not the MeMe II candidate, and I don't have all the answers. So what I say is that we put it to vote to the community to see what the community wants, what the residents want in their community. It's not up for the city council members to make all the executive decisions in this community. It is up to the residents to make those decisions.
I look at Forest Avenue as a very special place, and it is maybe one of the last remaining main streets in Orange County, maybe even Southern California, that hasn't been made into a mall or hasn't been an artificially created mall. This is a genuine downtown, and I think we should be careful not to mess with it.
George Dubin back with you. I am in favor of it, and I think it would be great to have a pedestrian street down there, and we should have built the parking lot at the village entrance.
Hi, Judy Mancuso, and I am in favor of it, but I would do a pilot program because I know that there's people that are a little afraid of it, and I think that we would pilot it for farmers market days, use the parking lot as a parking lot, close down Forest, have artists and musicians. I think it'd be really cool.
Unlike my colleagues who've never made payroll or know anything about retail, I support closing it down. I was instrumental in North Laguna, which was a horrible part of town until we got up there. We opened galleries, we brought in restaurants, we brought the art walk up there, and we turned it into a vibrant place for this community.
All right, we're going to move on to our next question. Sue, this is for you. Do you support parking meters on South Laguna streets, assuming we're able to pull off neighborhood parking zones?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Sounds like a council vote. No. And here's the reason why. Parking meters aren't the issue. It's that it's going to drive the young kids that are looking for parking spaces, won't pay $4.50 an hour to park. They're going to be circling like bees in all of the adjacent South Laguna neighborhoods, and that's bad for our rural neighborhood.
So assuming, Lorraine Laguna, assuming that we could have resident parking permits and the Coastal Commission would allow that, then yes, I would support it. However, I also support removal of all the metal parking meters throughout town and putting wireless transmitters underground and getting rid of the visual blight of those meters.
My answer is no, unless the South Laguna people support it.
My answer is yes, as long as the funds that come out of those meters go to paying for the garden park in South Laguna.
I'd have to consult my South Laguna friends and constituents. So I'd be in favor of it if they were, and if not, then I would probably, I'd have to be against it.
Maybe we can turn the garden into a parking lot and make everyone happy.
Hi, this is Tony Eisman. And I figured out how to do the quiet zone at Mozambique, which allowed that restaurant to stay open at night and keep the neighbors happy. It was threading a needle to do that. And if we're going to solve the problems in South Laguna, it's got to be two parts. Parking meters make sense, but we've got to make sure that neighborhoods are protected.
All right, this next rapid fire question is going to start with Allison. Are you in favor or opposed to Caltrans road widening proposal for Laguna Canyon Road?
No.
I really don't support anything that Caltrans is doing at the moment.
The answer is maybe, because I've seen three different plans for the widening. Two I didn't like. The one I did like had bicycle transportation, and Paul Merritt loves the idea of finally getting out of studies and consultants and doing bicycle transportation.
Lorraine Laguna, I served on the Laguna Canyon Road Task Force, and this issue has already been put to rest by the committee. No, on widening the lanes. It was already decided by 19 different organizations, and the community weighed in. And I like to listen to my residents, not myself. Thank you.
Are you talking about the current project or just in general? I felt that the widening of the road north of the El Toro Road intersection would probably be a good safety measure. And the area to the south, I am opposed to.
I'm only in favor of it if it was tied to undergrounding the poles and putting in a mass transit lane with peripheral parking. Otherwise, I'm against it because I live in the canyon and I see that traffic every day.
I went to a presentation that Hallie and Penny gave on this, and I agreed with everything that they presented. So yes, they showed that there was a part of it that was good, but then there was some issues.
I support it.
This is Tony Eisman. The North Safety Project, which means from El Toro Road towards the toll road, has to be made safe. And that's going to happen. It's just a matter of figuring out that Southern California Edison has to figure out where they're going to put their stuff. But what Caltrans is proposing south of there doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree with Tony, and she was just referencing before she ran out of time the south side. Caltrans came back today and didn't take any of our recommendations after we sat with them for two sessions.
All right, next question, Cheryl. This is going to start with you. Name some nonprofits that you have supported in the last year.
Well, that's easy. The latest one, last 10 years, I've been the treasurer. When you're at CPA, you know, you're always the treasurer of the Laguna Plain Air Painters. So right now, I spend a lot of time on that.
I guess the only nonprofit is the one I've been active in since this year, since I was 17 years old, and that's Laguna Beach Beautification Council. And I'm so proud of their activities because they're consistent, both in looking at the beautification for housing and trees.
Lorraine Laguna, I have served on many nonprofits in this community that I'm very proud to mention. I'm on the executive board of Laguna Canyon Conservancy. I'm a member of CANDU and was on the zoning committee. I was a board member of the Laguna Beach Beautification Council, and I am a proud member of CANDU.
Hi, I'm Ann Kristoff. I'm a member of LOCA, the Arts Education Group, South Laguna Civic Association, the Greenbelt, the Museum, the South Laguna Garden Park, the Beautification Council, Laguna Canyon Conservancy, and Village Laguna.
George Dubin with you as an artist, the Laguna Art Museum, and George Dubin.
Hi, I'm the founder and president right here in Laguna Beach of Social Compassion and Legislation. And it is a Laguna Beach nonprofit, and we had 5 bills signed into law this year in Sacramento, and we are saving and protecting millions of animals' lives.
I serve on none, and unlike my colleagues, beholden to none.
Hi, Tony Eisman. I was one of the original members of the board of the Laguna Canyon Conservancy. I served on the Laguna Greenbelt. I support the Friendship Shelter, the museum, the playhouse, and Laguna Live. And I'm so grateful for all the people who work so hard to bring so much culture and love into our community.
Hi, Sue Kemp. I'm a member of the museum, the festival, Laguna Beach Seniors, Marine Mammal Center, Boys and Girls Club.
Hi, Allison T. Matthews. I have served on the League of Women Voters. I am on the Affordable Housing Task. And when I was in San Clemente, I helped the hospice indigent who were dying in caretaking and in advocacy.
Okay, this next question is going to start with Paul. In the past year, about how many city council meetings have you attended?
Too many. My guesstimate is about 8 to 10, and probably about 3 workshops.
In Laguna, I have also attended at least one per month, and also spoken at many of them, as you know. Thank you, friends in the room. I see all of your faces out there.
I would say at least half of the city council meetings, maybe more. I think people are used to seeing me speak under public comment and on various planning issues that I am very concerned about.
When I'm not working, I've attended probably about 6.
A dozen?
Can't think of any.
All of them.
This is Sue Kemp. I've attended about 6. I'm on the Planning Commission. I watch them all on television because a lot of our work goes to the council. So we keep a close eye on Tony.
Well, I go to the Affordable Housing Task Force because I have to. I mean, I'm on that one, and then I've been to about 5. I guess, city council meetings? Yeah, that's right.
Cheryl Kinson. Well, I have served on the council before, so in the past 10 years, I've done everything in my power to not even, I don't even want to know what they were doing. But I found out, and that's why I'm here.
Next question, Lorene, this starts with you. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the least voluntary and 10 being the most voluntary, how voluntary do you feel the city's historic resource inventory should be?
I think that decision has already been made at the last Historic Preservation Ordinance meeting, and I would say probably our town and our community has done an excellent job in preserving the historic homes. I really think that we have as residents. That's why we have the town that's out there now.
Should I repeat the question? I know somebody asked for it to be repeated. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the least voluntary and 10 being the most voluntary, how voluntary do you feel the city's historic resource inventory should be? The meeting on Saturday was about CEQA and the city's interpretation of CEQA, so that answer has not been given.
Well, I can't put it on a scale of 1 to 10. if something is a historic resource, it has to be processed with the rules under CEQA. So the question is it a historic resource or not? And that's where we are right now. What is the criteria to make a historic resource? And that's what the historic task force is going to work on.
I think it should be mostly voluntary. Thank you.
Well, what I saw is it was about a 10, and that's what they voted on. I mean, there are requirements that are state requirements that you don't go beyond, and so I think that's what they decided.
I want to restore property rights. I am not about protecting these shacks that keep people from living in their homes and run people broke trying to add a spare bedroom to them. So, 10.
This is Tony Eisman. There are two words you need to understand, the registry and the list. If you're on the registry, you're on voluntarily. You put yourself there. And that means that that was a choice. And up until our weekend meeting, it became clear that the list looks like...
I'm a 10. I firmly believe that nobody's house should be put on any inventory or any list without their consent. I believe incentives, but I don't believe in people's houses being put on a list.
Can I be off the... It's Allison T. Matthews. Can I be off the clock for 1 second and have the question repeated? Because I'm not sure where the 10 and where the 1 falls.
Sure, yeah, no problem. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the least voluntary and 10 being the most voluntary, how voluntary do you feel the city's historic resource inventory should be?
Okay. I think that it is important to keep certain historical buildings and houses accurate. I do think that you got to figure out what's historic. And you've got to give it maybe 2 or 3 criteria that can't be changed on something, and then make it completely voluntary to the property owner. Yeah, voluntary.
Cheryl Kinsman, the absolutely most voluntary that it can legally be.
And Paul Merritt, 10 for voluntary and 1 to protect private property on the list. So 2 answers.
All right. Thanks for your patience on our 15-second questions, and thanks to our relentless tambourine man. This will be the last rapid-fire question before we go on a break, and this one will start with Anne. What is the number one issue facing the city of Laguna Beach right now?
I think the number one issue is discord, that we need to be working on projects as a community, build enthusiasm, and be inspired with our solutions so that we don't have Measure P and the conflicts that come from that when we could be with a good solution.
Our creative heritage and how we treat our creatives in this town.
Judy Mancuso, the absolute largest is climate change. I mean, without a doubt.
I consider crime and homelessness as an existential problem in Laguna Beach, and I will fight to make sure that we don't turn into a Santa Cruz, a Venice, or a Santa Monica at the request of some of my colleagues.
We are a town of 23,000, but our development in this town currently would be equal to a town of 100,000. We cannot keep up with things. And you hear about there's a problem with design review and everything takes so long. Design review is about 8% of the time. The rest is at the city. We don't have the support to make...
Sue Kempf, I think we need smart planning to adapt to the changing world around us. Going forward.
Allison T. Matthews, I'm worried about the heart of the village. I'm worried about what people want. I'm worried about the nastiness. I'm worried about us not thinking into the future for our kids. I'm worried about where they're going to be in 10, 20 years. I'm worried about the kids now.
Cheryl Kinsman, CPA, and for me, the number one issue is money. It's the taxpayers' money and how we use it.
Paul Merritt, I'll go to my simplest issue. I live down in Diamond Street, and speeding cars on Coast Highway are outrageous. Public safety is my number one issue all the time for everybody. And when Caltrans sits there 3 weeks ago and tells me the average speed limit is 62 mph.
Lorraine Laguna, one of the most concerning problems that we have is San Onofre. Thank you, Rita, for all your work that you've done. However, right on its tail is the economic fire that will be created by Measure P, and every one of you in this room has the ability to defeat that measure, and I ask you to do so.
All right, candidates, thank you so much for your participation. We're going to go to a short 5 to 10 minute break. During that time, for the audience, we're going to put a budget, actually the last 10 years of Laguna Beach's budget from data that we've collected, on the wall. And then when we come back, we're going to have the candidates talk a little bit about that. You're live on KX93.5, and we'll be back after this. So we're going to resume the radio broadcast portion of this now. I'll remind people, hopefully we can do that from the live soundboard back in the studio. You're listening to KX93.5. We're live from the Women's Club with our Stu News and KX93.5 City Council Candidate Forum, Shana Stabler.
All right. And we're going to start, we're back at the beginning. We're back with you, George. We're going to wait till that gets back up again. Now, obviously, we're not expecting you to do a full analysis of this budget, but maybe a couple takeaways. You did get the sheet, you know, a couple hours in advance, so you had some time and saw some of you talking. And it's also, let's remind that it's a budget. It's not an audit. And so with that said, there are certainly, I think, takeaways that you can take also from a budget, even though it's not an audit. So we'll start with you, George. 2 minutes, because money matters.
Okay, so my name is George Dubin again. What are the takeaways from looking at these numbers? I didn't get them 2 hours ago. I got them about 15 minutes before this. They're too damn small, for one thing. I can't read them. Beyond that, my background as an artist all my life, since I was 15, supporting myself through my art. I've never had a real job. Which comes down to some months are great, some months are not so great, and it's called living within your means. The fact that I'm 62 and I'm still able to do this, I think says something about how I'm fiscally responsible for my own life, and I've been able to do this all my life and will continue to do that. So that's what I'll bring in terms of looking at budgets, looking at numbers, living within your means, reallocating funds where they need to be, and quit wasting money on things like expensive consultants when we know what to do here in town. I'll let the rest of my time go to the other candidates.
Hi, Judy Mancuso. When I ran in 2016, I sat down with Laura Parisi, and then I sat down with Gavin and went over the budget to understand it. And what I found was, well, first of all, you can see that it's growing. That's one thing. And the second thing is I was against the tax back in 2016 that got voted in that had to do with the hotels, and that money would go for police and fire and undergrounding poles. So it happened, and the money is there, and it's growing as well. And then came this Measure P this time around. And it's like, well, wait a second. Well, we just had this tax, and the tax was off the backs of the visitors and not us. Why, in 2 years, do we need a tax that is not off the backs of the visitors, is off our backs? And it's going to be off our backs 365 days a year. Don't let anybody kid you. This is not about the visitors. So what I see in the budget is that we need to live within our means. We need to do fire prevention and mitigation. And if that includes undergrounding the poles on the canyon, then we can plan for that and do a pay-as-you-go. But what I do believe is that we have to learn from Caltrans, who is going to underground some of the poles, and we can figure out how long does it take, how much does it cost, and then that'll give us a better understanding of how much money we need. But I would like to spend our money on preventing fires every way we can, and if a fire starts, getting it out immediately. Thank you.
I run a small business. I live within my means. I have a business manager and I have a CPA that deals with all of these things. If we find ourselves in a position where we're questioning our budget, then we need to let go of the people that are not doing their jobs properly. We also need to have it audited. If we are all talking about a budget that isn't working, it doesn't sound right to us, we throw these numbers around in tens of millions, then we need a professional audit, and we need to be able to sit down, not as residents, but as people who we respect. These are CPAs, these are business managers, these are people like Cheryl, who understand money and understand numbers. Unfortunately, when I hear things about buying street front lots with taxpayer dollars, when I hear things about restoring sewers to the tune of $1 million, I start to get nervous about some of the people who might be running this community and running its finances. When I see that we are mired in lawsuits against our own residences, our own residents, because they can't build onto their own property, that scares me about certain ways that this town's being run. So I will let the numbers crunchers figure that out, and I'll let you figure out who amongst these people do you really want running your town, and what do they represent when it comes to managing those numbers for you.
This is Toni Eisman. The difficult thing about a debate is when there's a lot of misinformation, you don't get a chance to hold up a sign and say, that's not true. And there's a lot of stuff that's been said that's not true. People who are aware of cities know that cities have mandatory audits. That happens. And what you do is not only do you have an audit, but after a certain period of time, you change who the auditor is to make sure that it's right. What you see if you study this budget is a gradual increase of money coming into the community. And you also see places where it holds still. And it holds still when the economy gets soft and when the real estate market gets soft. That's what generates so much of what we have. And every time a house turns over, they end up, someone buys it, and it's valued at the determined by the price that the house was sold. So if we start seeing people losing their homes, then our budget gets a little shaky. We have an abundance of money, but we have an abundance of things to spend it on. Those visitors that come to our town cause us to spend a lot of money on police, a lot of money on fire. When I say fire, I'm talking about the paramedics also. We have lots of lifeguards. So all of the stuff that happens in our town costs us money, but hopefully and usually it generates much more money than it costs. But from a standpoint of the residents who are righteously frustrated about what's happening to our town in terms of being overrun with too many people, or as I say, being loved to death, we have to figure out the best way possible to cushion our residents from those things, and that money needs to be found in these budgets.
Yeah, this is Sue Kemp. I'd like to thank John Thomas for this eye chart. His name is at the bottom, and next time I see him, I'm going to
thank him in person. This is, you know, history is helpful. You know, as a business person, I'd rather see the budget projections for the out years. But, you know, what stands out to me, of course, is we've had, you know, like a 33% increase in our property taxes, which tells us, of course, we're having housing value appreciations, which is nice for all of us who own homes here. I think, you know, given the money that we're leveraging, I think we got a pretty poor investment return on the amount of money. I see the bid tax is up. That's being used for services, you know, because we're having a lot of tourists come to town. They're using that for services and a little bit for undergrounding. And if you notice, parking is what I would call, it's an economic term. It's inelastic, which means you keep raising the parking prices on the meters and people keep paying. So that's good news for us. They want to come and they want to pay. We'll just jack up the prices until they stop spending, and then it's elastic. One of my concerns, and I don't see it reflected here, is I don't see our payments for unfunded pension liability. It's not reflected here. And then on the spending side, we just had the Arts Alliance Forum last Saturday, and we talked a lot about cultural arts and what's happening in cultural arts. But I have no issue spending money on cultural arts in Laguna. It's a big economic driver of our economy.
Hi, Allison T. Matthews here again. I was businesswoman for 12 years, so I know audits are regular. I mean, it's a regular thing among the state. But is it a forensic audit necessary? I don't know. I can't make heads or tails of these numbers. And I don't have an MBA from Harvard. I don't have any, like, but it just, some things just don't make sense. I don't mind spending money, but I got to tell you, I spent time with the police department and with the fire department. We all did. And these poor people, the fire people said, please, just give us $15,000 so that we can get people, paramedics on these engines. We are sleeping on mats on the floor. And yes, a couple of our buildings have been retrofitted for earthquakes, but that was back in 1981, so that they implode instead of explode. They're scared of what could and will happen. They said it's a matter of time. The police told me their morale was so low because, first of all, and the turnover is crazy high because they don't have enough man and woman power behind them right now. We've got to hire more cops. We've got to support our first responders. I just think talking to them, you know when you're being told the truth. And I could see it in their eyes that they feel not appreciated. Maybe appreciated, but not supported, I guess is the best way of putting it. And I would definitely go back to the basics. If you want to spend money, do infrastructure. Fix the first responders. Let's get ourselves in a safe position before we start decorating the place or, you know, with fancy village entrances. Thank you.
Cheryl Kinsman, I can't do this in 2 minutes, but I'm going to start. And I'm going to go way back to 1992, when one lone CPA stood up and said to the powerful Orange County supervisors, the richest, one of the richest, most powerful counties in the entire country, and he said, you can't afford to pay your pension debt. He said that, and you know who he was, John Morlock. He became later, of course, a county supervisor after the county declared bankruptcy December 8th, 1994, one day after Pearl Harbor Day. Now I see our city, right now today, we owe $58 million on our pension debt. We're paying 7% interest. We're earning 2%. On our invested funds, we're paying 7. So, now the city wants a sales tax, increase the sales tax. What is that for? That sales tax is going to pay the interest only on $130 million bond to underground telephone poles. To underground telephone poles, it will only cover the interest. The principal, where's the principal going to come from? It's going to come from Measure LL. It's going to come from credits. It's come from the parking fund. It's come from every extra dollar we don't even have. My son, I use him as my shill, 24 years old. He will make the last payment on that bond when he's 54. Think of that. We're skipping an entire generation for what? Just so we can underground telephone poles?
I knew the money people get the big applause. Paul Merritt. As a businessman, you need to know just a little bit about my background. I get into the trenches with money. About 2-3 weeks ago, I had 2.5 days on a board that I work with to open, close, and agree to sign 5 very complex transactions totaling $14 million. I met the deadline. It was done in 1.5 days. If you've ever tried to refinance your house or a property, you know what a pain that is. I get down in the trenches with the money issues. The city of Laguna Beach has a huge problem, and it hasn't come because we've been lucky. North Carolina, Texas, hurricanes overseas. We see what we call the emergency. The emergency fund for Laguna Beach, according to our budget, is $6 million. Last year, the city council only put in $60,000. That's peanuts. Just wait until there's an issue or a problem. You have to have council people that have the foresight and can sacrifice in other areas. We have 262 people that are employees in our city, approximately, and 342 are retired. Have you ever tried to run a business where more people are retired than are working? That's why Social Security is in such a mess in this country. But I'd like to also look at the policing thing. You've heard me carp and bitch and moan about the, oh, I can't use that word.
Okay.
About speeding on Coast Highway. Let me tell you this. Your council member knows one issue. We had 4 traffic police 6 years ago. We have 1 now. That police person can barely write the traffic accidents. That's why we've got a raceway out there. We've got to shift the funding to protect the public safety and welfare of the people in this community. And then lastly, we need to examine the big issues like CalPERS, retirement issues, and all of that. These are extraordinarily complex and detailed problems.
So the question is, what are some of the takeaways from looking at these numbers? Let me tell you something. First thing that I would want to do is do a forensic audit. I don't want to be responsible for what the city has done before I take seat in council. I have never personally suffered a bankruptcy. I have learned to manage my own budget. My husband died of cancer. I raised my 2 children. I learned how to live within my means. The city should also. Measure P is an economic fire for our community. We need to make sure that we vote that down, because that is 25 years of a debt liability that we can't assume. And then what it does is it reduces our debt spending so that if we have another emergency like Bluebird Canyon, and we actually do need help, and our neighbors need help, our debt will go down, and we will not be able to borrow more additional money due to our debt liability that we currently have assumed. 54% of this general budget comes from you, from your property taxes. That means that you are the resident stakeholders. That means that the city council needs to listen to you. I believe that the city council should not be voting on capital expenditures that are over $5 million or perhaps 10. That should go to vote of the people. I absolutely do not want to be the one to vote an economic fire on this community should that Measure P pass, which I hope it doesn't. But there's no way I would want to out have 5 votes, or 3 actually, because 3 council votes is God in this town, as we all know. I would not want to put that on the community or be responsible for that. I would think that the residents should be the ones to decide. Thank you.
Ann Christoph, well, the first thing that I noticed about these budgets is that they are 3 times as high as they were when I was on the council the last time. So 1994, we had about a 30-some million dollar budget. Now we have a $98.6 million budget.